Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255 or text 580-580. With Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth, here is Steve Gregory.
Well, the sun may not be shining outside, but it's brilliantly sunny in the studio today. Paul sure is not here.
We are surrounded by two beautiful women in the studio with us.
Yes, yes. Yes, the room got a lot smarter today.
Much.
Dora's here.
Hello, hello.
And you brought a guest.
I did. Tanya. Tanya
Hi.
Woods.
Hi, everybody.
Who's Tanya?
Tell our listeners
who I am.
Who you are.
It's probably a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I was born in.
Yeah. A long time ago. No, I'm the head of government and regulatory affairs for Questrade Financial Group, and we also are the owner of Community Trust Company.
One of the lenders that we work with frequently. So, alternate lender that's out there.
Yeah, I told you there's more brains in the room.
See?
All of a sudden, I feel very stupid. I was a disc jockey.
For 45 years.
Yes.
And Dora, I'm surprised you're here today. I thought you'd be, like, there's so many listings right now. I thought you'd be filling listings all afternoon.
There are. There really are. We're up. We're almost at 4,000 listings.
Actually, that's not bad.
Which is not bad. I mean, we're up, definitely up from a few years ago and from last year. The market is moving. Like, the volume of sales are increasing. We're up, 13% year to date from this time last year. That's a good thing.
At this time last year, were we just starting to climb again?
Let's see. This is where stats are interesting. Where you can, this time last year, we're starting to climb again. So, yes. And
why is that? Do you remember why?
I don't know. Are you going to
tell me? Bank of Canada paused.
Yes.
That's right.
So they went through that little pause where everybody thought,
everybody thought this was it.
That was it. Okay,
we're
on our way down.
That's right. And sort of, that gave a lot of optimism to buyers and things started happening. And then as, it became evident that nothing else was going to happen and interest rates were going to stay or even increase, a lot of buyers sort of went back to the sidelines. And it does come down to the same thing. It's affordability. It's getting back into the market. It's being able to afford saving for a down payment with the interest rates the way they are, with the way rents have gone up, 8.6% in the last year. An increase in rent prices. So if you're paying that much more for rent, how do you save for a down payment?
Exactly.
And how do you move on up?
Yeah.
No.
Was there one rent increase after that pause? I think so.
Two.
There were two?
Yeah, two summer increases by a quarter point.
It stalled
everything again. Yeah. Now, we haven't had any. We're approaching a year of no rate increases. We're 9 months in. So June and July will be interesting because one of them should bring a rate cut. Either June or July should bring a rate cut.
Even though inflation went up by...
Well, but a little bit. But the core inflation came down, which is one of the big things I think that Tiff Macklem looks at. What's going to hold us back? I think it's south of the border, where their economy is just booming there, unfortunately, and their inflation numbers are way above ours. And I think Mr. Macklem's going to have a tough decision to make, whether he jumps ahead of the U.S. and starts cutting before the U.S. does.
How'd you like to get a mortgage in the States now? 7.1%.
Wow. Yeah.
For 30 years.
Yeah, they're stale, right? And that's the thing. So house sales in the U.S. are stale.
Yeah.
But again, the benefit is that anybody that got a mortgage during the pandemic were getting 30-year mortgages at 3.5%. So they have no motivation whatsoever to move because a lot of them won't move up anymore. Number one, losing that rate. And number two, the cost of everything else has gone up tremendously in the U.S. So the only thing that's helped the U.S. is that their mortgage rates that everybody got back during the pandemic kept their payments flat, where in Canada we've got a lot of Canadians' mortgages coming up for renewal this year and even a bigger chunk of them next year and the year after. So that's where the interest rates got to start to come down. Otherwise, our economy is already starting to sputter, but we'll start to see a lot more downside to our economy as more mortgages come up for renewal.
I think so. And sort of just looking at my clients and looking at the people we have working with our brokerage, and I know I have, a limited view, but I do feel like I have a lot of eyes on the market. The savings that people had through the pandemic are helping them along right now. And I think as those savings dwindle, the cost of living and sort of the cost of every day is really, really having an impact on people. So with more and more mortgages coming up for renewal, I think we're going to see the inventory come up, but not for the right reasons.
Thankfully, the new budget is saving the day.
Oh. I was waiting for that.
Tanya's got her feet up saying, this is easy.
Great. They're just chatting away. Perfect. Well, yeah. I mean, look, the budget was a housing budget. There's no question. We've certainly been keeping an eye on the market, very aware Canadians are stressed out about their housing situation, and rightfully so. You know, it's been a hard few years, and yes, there was some maybe a moment of, you know, ambition and hope at the start of the pandemic, but that's dwindled away quite quickly. And so we've been looking a lot with the government and with our colleagues in the industry and saying, you know, what can we do? We care a lot about Canadians. We want to see them be financially successful and secure. We want to see prosperity thrive in this country. We want people to stay here. We have, you know, a talent crisis we're also worrying about. So there's a lot that goes into all of these areas, and we didn't land here yesterday. This crisis started a while ago, so it's going to take a while to fix. We've got to unpack several pieces of our economic strategy here to make it go right. But there were a lot of announcements. I don't know if it's good with everybody here. I'll bore you with a few of the details if you'd like.
That'd be amazing.
I'll make it sort of snappy.
Even though some of the news is like 3 weeks old because they told everybody.
Well, right? There was a lot of spoiling. And a lot of it was a reinstatement as well of things that have previously been said. So I'm not going to focus too much on those. But let's talk about some new things. So we saw an increase in the home buyer's plan, RRSP withdrawal limit from $35,000 to $60,000 with an extended payback period. I think it's being received relatively.
Of 18 years, right? Instead of 15.
Yeah,
so now
exactly.
You have 18
so plus
years
three.
To pay back.
And you don't have to start paying for 5 years now, right, as opposed to two?
Right.
Yes, they delayed that. But, again, how many first-time home buyers even had $35,000, never mind $60,000? So. Yeah. Is it good? Sure it is. I think where that one will benefit is somebody who's gone through a separation and or a divorce where they become eligible to take money out of their RSP. So maybe, you know, and unfortunately I'm seeing a lot of couples that are going through this in their 50s.
Yes.
So
yeah,
when they're splitting their assets and they're having to go into a home and they want to keep their payments low, especially with interest rates high, they have no problem taking money out of their RSP to be able to put into a deposit or down payment. So that's where it's going to benefit. I'm not so sure it's going to help any first-time home buyers because 35 was already a stretch.
Yeah, they don't have 60 grand.
60 is not even in question.
No, exactly. And it's in play now, right? So this is withdrawals made after April 16th.
Right.
So for people to know, it's already in play. The extension of amortization period, 25 years to 30 years for insured mortgages on new builds for first-time home buyers. Right. I know this group has a lot to say about that particular one.
It should be for everybody, but
let's get the facts first.
That's what it is.
You got to buy a new construction, be a first-time home buyer, and if you do that, you get access to a 30-year amortization. And
it's got to be insured.
It's got to be with less. Now, again, if you buy with 20% down, you can get a 30-year amortization anyway. So. But anybody who's a first-time home buyer or buys construction at least can buy with less than 20% down. But the problem is, again, my own personal opinion is that this is just the first of little teasers, and then as we get closer to the election, I think that'll be opened up to all first-time home buyers. So I think it's just, you know, he's walking
instead
of running.
It should be open to all home buyers.
It should have been right from the beginning. The problem is,
sir, do you think it'll be opened up to all first-time home buyers, resale and new construction? And Steve, are you saying it should be open up to all buyers? So you're saying two different things, yeah?
Yeah, I'm saying it should be open to anybody should be able to get a 30-year amortization.
And I think that's coming. So it might be first-time home buyers. I think the safe route. The problem is we still have a supply issue. So I don't know that they want to open up too much.
Well, TIF doesn't want anything happening anyway. So the government's in a weird spot because you've got the government of Canada saying, don't buy homes because we don't want it. You know, we're wanting to control inflation. And then you've got the liberals now who are saying, well, here's a little nugget. But
how much TIF wants? He wants the government to stop spending money so that the inflation can come down. That's what I think TIF wants because they're actually going against what he's trying to do. That's the problem. But I think on the 30-year amortization, I think it's great. I think it should be across the board. I'm not even against 35-year amortization. So let's call a spade as home prices have gone up.
And people are living longer.
What is wrong with retiring at 65 or 70 years old and if you have an $800,000 home with a $200,000 mortgage? You don't have to be mortgage-free anymore. Right. It's okay. As long as you have a whole bunch of equity in there and the mortgage then allows you to be able to amortize it as you go into retirement to a longer period and you've got reasonable payments, less than what your rent payment is, what's wrong with that? I think we just have to change our thinking a little bit where ideally, yes, if you can retire without a mortgage, that's awesome. But if you have a small mortgage on your house with a value and a lot of equity built in, There's nothing wrong with that either.
Mm-hmm. Great points. Mortgage charter updates. So we now know that there's a clarification for Canadians with insured mortgages that they do not need to requalify for the stress test when they switch lenders.
Yes.
You've been advocating for that for a long time.
Yeah, for a long time. Yeah. Now, again, so I think we're able to use – I think there's more details to come on that. I don't know that they've given us exactly when it goes into play.
But they announced that a while ago, though, didn't they?
They did, but they just haven't verified all the fine details. So
that's right.
The plus two is something that we've been advocating to get rid of. Like, this plus two needs to go because they should just have a qualifying rate and just make it the qualifying rate. So if the interest rates come down, just like we did when they were at one, listen, they're patting themselves on the back because what they did with the stress test actually was very beneficial because during the pandemic, when people were getting 169, 189, they had to qualify at 475 to 525. So that's where rates are now, coincidentally. Yeah. So set that rate, and regardless of what contract anyone takes, whether it's a variable, whether it's a fixed, a 1 year, 5 year, it doesn't matter. You need to qualify at 5.25. Just set the rate and never mind this plus two on the contract. That's all that's what we're advocating for. Just set a rate and let that rate be the qualifying rate.
Yeah, because the plus two limits you if you want to go variable or not.
So right now we're having to put people in a 5 year fixed because they don't qualify for the variable because the variable is higher. And that's not necessarily what's in their best interest because now they're stuck in that 5 year rate. And as interest rates come down over the next year, year and a half, they're going to kick themselves and say, oh my God, I just lost out and maybe getting mortgage at 3.5.
And I had no
and
choice.
And I'm stuck at this 5% rate. So that's what's wrong with the system.
521-TALK, 521-8255. We will be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show. On News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Dora found her phone if you'd like to call her.
Please do. Moment of panic. Moment of panic.
Gotta watch a real estate agent panic. Where's my phone?
Emergency. I couldn't even call anybody to help me.
Yeah, and we tried to call you. You had it silent because you didn't want us hearing it on the air.
That's right.
Different kind of stress
very
test.
Very smart.
That's right.
Different kind of stress. Right.
Speaking of stress tests.
Yeah. Hey, capital gains. Let me ask you about capital gains.
Let's talk about capital gains.
What pisses me off, the capital gains.
It's not so bad.
It is. Okay, so a hardworking family has a cottage.
Yes.
When they sell their cottage, now their capital gains goes up. Well, if you want to go after offenders that I think you want to go after, which are the big corporations, well, then go after them, but leave the families alone.
And that happens
home that they use as a cottage.
I was thinking that like a once in your lifetime, you should have a buy. Like if you have a cottage that you sell once... Like if you're buying cottages and flipping them and renovating, whatever, then it's a business. Yeah. And therefore, you should pay the capital gains. But if you have a cottage that has been in your family for 60, 80, 40 years, and then you inherit it and you go to sell it, it just seems...
Yeah, I don't even think that should be 50%, let alone 67%.
Exactly. So, I think a lot of people are disappointed at that one, right?
There's been a lot of vocalization of... irritation on the capital gains, no question.
And if you inherit the cottage,
it's a lovely way to say it.
If you inherit the cottage, it's the same thing.
Vocalization of frustration.
Yeah. Yes. That is a fair assessment.
Yep.
We'll see more about that, though, this week, I'm sure. That conversation's not over.
I hope not.
And this was not, I know there's political commentators that have said, look, like, we always knew it could happen. But the reality was it hadn't happened, and it kept getting shelved as an idea. But it's here now, so we'll see what the public says about it. There's a lot of opinion on that.
Yeah, they got to fine tune that.
Yeah, well, they have. Really... I mean, we're going to see a budget implementation act. The details will come. We'll see what happens between now and then. For sure.
How long do you think before we see that?
You know, certain parts. Well, it depends. Like certain parts, like they announced open finance, which is less relevant for our show today. But they said, you know, we could expect legislation and start working through it in a matter of weeks. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to come through the Budget Implementation Act, although we think it will. I think May, June depends on how much pushback they get, and they're going to have to see what they.
Is there a fall budget too, or no? Is it usually...
there'll be a Budget Implementation Act in the fall as well? We're expecting.
So there's
two
more, maybe, right? So there's another spring budget maybe next year before the election.
Will the fall be a mini budget?
It's usually smaller. Yeah. Let's see. We'll see how they get through this cycle. Before they rise in the summer for break. We'll have to see how they do.
Yeah, interesting.
Hey, maybe the NDP. NDP will vote against it.
Yeah, good luck.
Let's see. I mean, they were threatening that.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The open banking is interesting. I mean, I saw that they put the open banking on there. Where personally, as a mortgage broker, I like that part because they're always dissecting mortgage broker files and you know, validity of income. And I think it's happening at the branch level too. It just gets highlighted more on the mortgage broker space. Even though I always question whether there's more fraud for, what do they call it? Fraud for home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody intends on not making the mortgage payments, but they commit fraud
in order to
be able to get into home ownership. So there's quite a bit of that, more of it in the GTA area than there is in other parts.
Used to think of that as creative. Now it's
fraud.
It's definitely a problem.
Except for fraud is fraud, right?
Yeah,
so what they're working with is CRA to be able to unveil to lenders whether CRA numbers. So in other words, what your actual income is
from your tax
Your tax return.
Mm-hmm.
So. I think that'll be good. Yeah.
I think
it's really good for our industry.
It's really good for our industry. And it prevents people from buying houses at values that are well over market value. And it allows more people into the market. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's great.
Yeah. They're going to be consulting with industry. And they announced that
as well.
Which
they have been.
They have been.
Is really good.
We're supportive. We're happy about that for sure.
So are we.
Yeah. They've been saying they're going to crack down on real estate fraud in relation to tax noncompliance. As well, so that was announced as well. So a few of the fraud measures are good.
Yep, they are good.
Very happy to see it. The open banking, I want to go back to it though, because initially it was only going to be data coming from your bank going to bank-like offerings and accounts. We pushed really hard to open it up to have mortgages as well included. So
and it should be.
That's amazing, but it also puts Canada in a really nice place. It's broader than what the Americans are doing right now. It puts us closer toward Europe. It's very, very good from an innovation perspective. So
without infringing on privacy.
Correct.
That's the key that a lot of people, it's consumer driven.
Consumer driven.
You want to have your privacy infringed upon, apply for a mortgage.
Yeah.
Right. Sensitive. Of course. Insurance. I think there was some interesting moves on insurance. Flood reinsurance, providing $15 million to CMHC to advance the implementation of a national flood insurance program by 2025. Definitely climate change is putting a lot of pressure on these types of conversations. So there was a reaction to that. And I know the insurance industry was really loud about it.
Well, they are. And hopefully it opens up the door for anyone that might own a property on a floodplain to be able to get financing on it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we saw, was it
CIBC,
CIBC or Desjardins? One of them was
pulling
out
yes.
on the Quebec side. They weren't doing anything in flood zones, pulling all the financing. So. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this reassurance will allow for people to be able to, that own a home, will be able to refinance their home because that's what's happening. I mean, that's where it really hurts is, you know, if you take the risk of buying in a floodplain, then you know up front that you're buying in a floodplain.
Yeah, but don't forget, these floodplains, Frank, are going to be expanded now.
Of course they are.
They're going to get bigger and bigger.
And the data needs to be available to Canadians. And I mean, we've been very strong advocates about this. We've said, look, there's a lot of data points in the market that could give you so much more information about that asset that you maybe make the purchase of what, like if you're fortunate, once, twice in your life you buy a home. Don't you want to know the value of that home is real?
Yeah.
Don't you want to know as much about it as you can, especially about its location, if it's on a floodplain or not? So we've been pushing the government saying like make that data available. Show Canadians like what is the real value of their asset. When they're buying, they know what they're buying. They know they're making a good investment. And they did make some announcements. They said they are going to make some of this data a little bit more transparent.
Which is important.
We need
because,
it. It is important.
Because as Canadians, I find they hide data for profit. That's the only thing that I can think is, because otherwise, why would you hide that data from us? Why not share that data with us?
Different people have it, right? And so we've definitely, we're happy to see a step in the right direction. More. We want more.
Good.
So,
are you seeing people more concerned buying on the water now, Dora?
Certainly.
Yeah.
The insurance is a big concern there.
If you can get it,
yes,
right?
If you can get it. Flood insurance is difficult to get for a lot of properties. And just in the last few years with Ottawa, we've had some very, very significant flooding.
Yeah.
And that has affected the property values of a whole lot of homes.
If you can't get flood insurance, can you get a mortgage?
No, that's...
Just
so
flood
insurance.
You can still get insured, but if you can't get flood insurance, no mortgage?
No, because the lender's going to say, so now my asset is depreciated because I'm owed $300,000 that cottage is no longer worth $300,000 if it's,
it's under.
So it has to be. And I've had clients say, well, I'll take my chances without it. That's fine. As long as you're paying for it cash, you're on your own.
Right.
But the minute you apply for financing, it has to be fully insured. Otherwise, the lender's not going to lend you any money.
Yeah, because their asset is on the line.
Of course.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Of course. Yeah. Yes. Yes, their asset is on the line.
Good times.
Yep.
On that note, 521 talk.
Hey, Tanya, nothing changes with Steve.
No, it's been a long time.
521 talk. 521-8255. All four assets will be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Door in for Paul. Tanya's here. Frank is here. All the brains in the house today.
On this side of the table.
Yeah. I could qualify
side.
Myself on that side.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all over here.
Door, are you hearing any concerns about the capital gains rule now?
Oh, you mean people trying to sell before the 25th of June? Well, I would think that there are going to be some savvy investors or people who own multiple properties that are going to give it some thought, right? Because if a home is closed before the 25th of June, my understanding is the capital gains new rules from the budget don't come into play. The one thing that I will note is that
it's got to close, though, right?
It can't close.
You can't sell by the 25th,
right.
And then
it's
it closes
close.
In September, because then you'll be subject to the
that's
new
right.
rules,
which
no.
is what 17% more, right? On after 250.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and that's a significant amount. However, I think right now a lot of people are concerned that although you know the prices are increasing marginally, they're staying fairly stable, and we're much, much higher than we were 5 years ago. If you go to look at you know what a residential property was sold for. In Ottawa, in 2019, the average residential property sold for $480,000 in March of 2019. And today, the median, the average sale price for residential property is $763,000, right? So that's a really big difference. So there is motivation to sell because of capital gains, but the volume of sales is still down. We're up from last year, but we're down 15% from the 10-year average. And I think if you think about what the population is today versus what it was 10 years ago, and I didn't pull the stats on that. I don't know how much Ottawa has grown in the last 10 years, but we've grown a lot. And so to have a volume of sales down 15%.
When there's more inventory out there.
When there's more people.
There's even
people,
more than 15%.
Right? There are more people. There's all sorts of stuff. So the
more people, but same inventory, right?
More people, same inventory, less volume,
yeah.
right? So, mm-hmm. like, less volume of sales. So the inventory is staying steady. I don't know. Like, long answer, short answer, I don't know. I think it will just depend on the math.
Circumstances.
It depends on the circumstances, depends on the math. It depends if you have a tenant maybe that you are not too keen on having. Maybe this is sort of, you know, the last straw to sort of push you and to put it up for sale and to try to close it before the 25th of June.
Now, what happens if investors start selling these properties? Who's going to buy them? No investor, because you're going to be cash flow negative.
Well, that's the point, though, right?
Yeah,
so if they're selling them, you know, if the government really wanted to achieve getting more houses on the market, then it shouldn't have been June. They could have extended it maybe to November, December, so that, you know, investors would say, okay, but now it's meant for buyers who are going to own or occupy to move into it.
Right,
so first time
home
buyer going in with they couldn't get a 30-year amortization, but a first time home buyer going in, and all of a sudden it changes from an investment property to an owner occupied property.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would be the benefit, I think.
It certainly would be the benefit, but I think a lot of investors may not want to sell because they're thinking that their asset isn't as valued right now as it potentially could be when
the interest
rates
come down. Yep.
So is it really going to make a significant impact in our market? I don't believe so, but
yeah, which leads us to renters, right? So there was the renters bill. Did they highlight a little bit more? I mean, they talked about it 3 weeks ago, I think Mr. Trudeau brought it up. Justin Trudeau brought it up maybe 3 weeks ago. And did they put more details, or did he just repeat what they said
ago? Not a lot more, honestly. I think the main thing to look at now is sort of allowing renters to opt into reporting their rent payment history to credit bureaus to help them qualify for their mortgages.
And they
sounds
say
like
it,
gonna
which
help
is nice.
Hurt.
Well, who knows, right? I mean, these are new ideas in some cases.
So who decides? Is it the landlord who decides? That's why I'm looking for more details. So who decides to report it? The landlord? And then how does the landlord get access to Equifax/TransUnion to report these? Mm-hmm. And are you going to give landlords all of a sudden access to the credit reporting system? I'm not sure the credit reporting system
wants that. And should
they have
it? That. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if the tenant decides, well, then somebody who's not paying the rent won't disclose it, but somebody who is. So I just don't get
it. I
don't know that they do the research deep enough before they make these announcements to figure out whether, you know, banks have always had troubles with some of the announcements that are made because the government makes these announcements without talking to them, and then they got to change their systems, and they say we can't change the systems that quickly. So, you know, the savings plan that came out a year ago, it took some of the banks 4 or 5 months to get that system up and running for that specific product.
So they didn't have a heads up. They need a heads up, right?
Yeah, if they had a heads up, they would have prepared for it. Instead, they had.
You know what would help us with that? A permanent mortgage or housing roundtable.
There you go.
Right? Like, we've been calling for it as an industry, saying, could you please bring industry into the mix when you're thinking of these things so we can tell you the realities. And the delay times, it's administratively heavy. Community Trust Company is a small organization. We're not the same as the banks. And we're seeing a lot in the mix now. And we have for quite some time. All of these little piecemeal measures or big measures that are not that coordinated. And you know, you want to make sure you're doing all the right things for your customers and making sure everybody knows and can take advantage. But the reality for businesses does take a long time. So mid-year changes, and we've heard a lot of political pundits talking about them, you know, difficult, very difficult to say the least.
But, well, changes, and then there's that lag time, and they still have to pass.
It still has to pass. Right. And in some cases, you know, there'll be retroactivity. In some cases, it'll be forward-looking. Like, we'll have to.
But retroactive doesn't help you unless you're ready for it.
Exactly. So we'll have to see how we go, but we've got some months of analysis. The only other one I wanted to make sure we could talk about, because I'm really curious what you guys think about it, is the $409.6 million over 4 years to CMHC to launch a new Canada Secondary Suite loan program. I'm curious, you know, do you think, Dora, I'm thinking, you know.
Is that the same thing as what they did in the Maritimes? I think it is. Like, was New Brunswick or Nova Scotia? Nova Scotia, I think.
Lower interest loan.
Yeah.
Talked about a $40,000 low interest rate loan where you can put a secondary unit to assist in having some housing available for more people, specifically young people.
Of course.
You know, I think the idea in Nova Scotia was if you've got an aging parent.
That's right.
You know, nursing homes are extremely expensive to put them in. Why not build a secondary unit so that you could be close to them and be able to look after them? Or, unfortunately, there's lots of parents out there right now that are saying, my kid's never going to move out, but at least if you've got a low interest rate loan that you can build a secondary unit, I don't know that $40,000 gets you very far. I mean, Italians can build a second kitchen no problem with $40,000, but
they build a second kitchen on new construction.
Oh, yeah. It comes with the house. It's part of the plan. So
it is multi-generational living is something that is, I mean, builders are on board. A lot of our buyers are looking at doing that. But I think a secondary unit for income purposes, it might attract.
But you need the property for it too.
You do need the property for it, and you need access to, you know. So that's why some of the wartime homes with the side entrance that you have direct access to the basement do sell disproportionately higher than some of, you know, similar homes in those areas, just because people are thinking ahead of being able to put a secondary dwelling in.
Perfect. More permits, more wasted time.
that's what needs to be fixed right there. This municipal/provincial/federal, getting these permits and getting the lands, you know, in place so that building can start and drop these numbers of crazy, crazy fees to get permits to do things where a builder is $100,000 in the hole before they even put a shovel in the ground. The consumer pays for that, and it's driven the prices of homes as high as it has right now. So,
and it delays them.
Everything.
Delay
like,
them.
You know, here
like
we
it's
are.
Great to come up with these new things for first-time homebuyers on new construction, if there's new construction.
Right. The other thing, why not the government? You want to do immigration? Let's talk about immigration. Here's what we need. We need healthcare workers.
Yeah, we do.
And we need construction workers.
Yes, we do.
Come to Canada if you fail one of these two fields. If you don't do one of these two, the door's not open. Here's what we're looking for. We need tradespeople to build houses. Mm-hmm. Put them in, you know, there's one in Canada right by the Tanger. There's this big facility where they teach you. The carpenter school.
That's right.
Put them in there. Like, let's get them in there and give them, you know, whether it's interest-free loans, student loans, give them loans so that they can learn the trade and therefore stay in Canada and be welcomed in Canada. but actually add value to the country, which is
But again, if you don't cut the red tape, nobody's going to build.
I agree, but these are all the steps they have to take in order to get houses built. We're not building 3 million homes the next 6 years with the labor force we have right now. It's impossible. It just can't happen.
I don't know where I read it, but I did read that something like 22% of the trades are retiring in the next 15 years.
Yeah.
And so we don't have enough influx of young people going into those jobs. So incentivizing people to go into trades and then getting the workforce in order to build these, 3.87 million homes by 2031, we really, really need help on that.
What do you think of the government selling off 50% to turn into residential of their government land?
Long overdue. If it's not being used, what are they waiting for?
Mm-hmm. If it's not being used for offices and if it will never return to offices, I think it's
Canada Post buildings, right?
Yeah. Where,
it's land. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. And why not? I mean, if they're underutilized and we have a shortage of housing, that's perfect.
Well, and they tend to be closer to the urban core. So that allows for transit, it allows for other jobs, it allows for a lot of things. They tend to be in very good locations. So
Use them for affordable housing.
That's
though.
Right.
Densification is a strategy.
Absolutely.
It is a strategy. We need to densify. So.
And how much of a dent does this make?
Well, I mean,
it's a start.
Andrew Coyne gave a quote earlier this week, and he said, of the 1.2 million more units, this reflects about a third of what CMHC said is needed to bring back affordability. So, I mean, it's ambitious by a lot of accounts, what they've done in this budget, but still not enough. And so there's
so far down the road to get it done. I know you got to take the first step, but it's still going to take a while to have an impact.
And I think Frank drew this out, though. We're talking about cooperation against multiple layers of government. So it's not just that the Fed can come in and say, we're going to do one thing. Everybody else now agree. We've got the provinces and the municipalities to work with, too.
Yeah.
And the time it takes. I mean, to build a multi-story building for rent purposes and for affordable housing takes years.
Yeah.
And so if we had an influx, again, of 1.2 million people into the country, I'm not sure why we thought we would have enough housing.
When we were already short housing.
That's right.
And not to mention all the other things that we're behind on, including health care.
Yeah.
So too many Canadians don't have doctors, and that's right. A problem.
So how expensive is it to convert a second kitchen to a bachelor apartment?
Well, depends if you shower in the sink.
I would know. I'm Italian, so I don't know. We only build second kitchens.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe you could convert yours, make a little extra money. 521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to the show.
Do we have a smart Rushfort on the phone?
Two of them.
A smart is
two.
There is such a thing as.
There's only two.
Yes, yes.
One of them is Colleen, I know for sure.
That's for sure.
And Ron's the other one.
Oh, Ron's the other one. There we go. I knew it wasn't Paul.
This is our annual. I love this. And you realize you do have to sing.
Yep.
Paul's birthday is, what day is Paul's birthday now?
The 22nd, and his sister's the 23rd. So they're the same age for one day.
Wow.
Monday, the 22nd.
He turns, he looks 60, but he turns 50, I think, right?
Mentally, he's still
unlike
16,
Colleen.
Though.
Colleen can fall for his older sister.
Oh, thanks.
Why would you say older?
Wow.
Well done.
Yes.
A good show today. A really good show.
Thank you,
thanks,
Colleen.
Thank you.
We'll be sure and tell Paul.
Happy birthday to you.
Why don't I tell you?
Oh.
That's awesome.
He's listening to the show.
He is listening, probably. If he's listening, he calls in. So he's probably not
listening. He's listening.
Go ahead. Give him your message.
He's listening. Okay. Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Paul. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah!
Yay!
Thanks, Ron and Colleen.
That's awesome. Thanks, guys.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's fantastic.
Parents are the best.
They are the best.
Parents are the best.
Unless you're a teenager, you don't think
that. No, that's right.
Once you become older, you start to appreciate your parents a little bit more.
Actually, people are appreciating their parents into their 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s
yeah.
now. Because they're living with them.
They ain't leaving.
That's right.
They're just not leaving.
Hey, yeah. Mom.
Yeah. Speaking of which, how much gifting is going on these days in order for people to get their first time home?
There's stats all over the place, but it's getting higher and higher. That number is getting higher and higher. And again, I mean, I'm a big fan of the guarantor program, and I'm not a big fan of the co-signing program. There are a lot of, you know, people out there that just because of the stress test and having to qualify 2 points over, they just don't cut it. So therefore getting and it has to be an immediate family member on as a guarantor. What that allows us to do is use the income. Now, again, they've got to have income. They've got to add positive, obviously, to it. So they've got income and maybe not a lot of debt that we can use their income and able to get, you know, the kids across the finish line and get them to qualify.
So their equity doesn't count? It's got to be income?
Everything's about income today. So qualifying for a mortgage is not about your net worth. It's about how much you make. So this is where... You know, the one thing that I'm disappointed, and the stress test did its job, like it said, during the pandemic it did its job. But unfortunately, what the stress test is doing now, it's driving good, hardworking Canadians that are already struggling to make ends meet to alternate lenders. And listen, Community Trust is an alternate lender. And
regulated.
They like to see, regulated, but an alternate lender. So they can go above on the GDS and TDS, which allows them, but it comes at a bigger cost to Canadians. And not that I want the alternative lenders to be there, but what disappoints me is that there's good, hardworking families that are having to go to alternate lenders because of the stress test, and in essence, they end up paying more. So it doesn't help them. It actually gets them deeper and deeper into debt as opposed to maybe being able to pay off the debt and get them in a better position. So
yeah, but they should at least have the choice, right?
Well, but I think if the rules were put in place where they didn't have to qualify through the stress test.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so now on a renewal, they don't have to, but a lot of these clients have credit card bills. They've got, and they've got the equity in their home, so they want to be able to add that credit card debt to their mortgage so that they can refinance it. And listen, I think the alternate lenders do a really good job, and they're pretty fairly priced in comparison to what, but it's still 1% more, generally speaking, than your traditional bank or lender that you would get the mortgage. So it's that 1% when we're talking about average home being in the sevens, an average mortgage maybe in Ottawa being in the threes or fours, that's a lot of money that they're putting out that they wouldn't have had to put out if we didn't have this stress test in those circumstances.
But I do want to say, like, the reality is our financial institutional landscape is not competitive. It's not competitive.
Agreed.
And we've been pushing on the government and saying, look, like, we need more competition, especially in the regulated space, because at least you know in the regulated spaces, these are entities that are overseen by broader regulators. And so there's a compliance, there's a safety, in theory, there's a safety and a security of that. The other thing is that we want to make sure people are aware of is mortgage literacy is not high.
No.
No, it's not. No,
it's not high. And the government...
Listen,
you know,
to this show.
No. excellent spot for mortgage literacy. Yeah. Thank you, Steve, for letting me make a call out to Frank. You know, but we need more Canadians listening. And they're not all here yet, right, Frank?
They're not yet. I mean, a lot
Most
of people...
Of them,
there's still a lot of Canadians out there that think using a mortgage broker... You should only do it after your bank turns you down.
Absolutely.
And it's the farthest thing from the truth.
Absolutely.
You should start with the mortgage broker, and the bank should be your last connection, not the other way around.
That thinking is over 20 years old now.
Well over 20 years old.
It is a bit antiquated for sure. Yep.
Yep.
So 4,000 listings or so right now?
4,000 listings or so right now.
Are we starting to see things pick up a little bit?
Well, the second Q2 of any year historically is about 50% of the sales. So hopefully things will pick up.
So if you're thinking of selling, you better get on.
If you're thinking of selling, you better get on because the inventory will likely go up. And, you know, it's supply and demand. And there's not an awful lot of supply. I mean, an awful lot of demand.
And how do we get a hold of you?
Dora@paulrushforth.com.
Birthdays, Frank?
A couple, but thank you, Tanya, for coming in.
I was getting to that.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome
to come on the show anytime.
Maybe Tanya's got some birthdays she wants to share.
You know what? Can we do like birthdays ahead of time?
Of course.
Like May?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Like mine?
Well, yeah. There you go.
No, my husband and my father, my stepfather, both birthdays in May.
That's awesome.
Better
Happy
birthdays
birthday.
Than mine, but I'll take one too.
Yeah, yeah. Shelby from our office, reader Sean Reed, celebrating his birthday this week. Brian Cork, who's going to be on our show soon with me because he won it during an event we had in January, and Renelle Hart from our office, all celebrating birthdays. So happy birthday, and congratulations to my good friends Joe and Maria, who are just announced that they're going to be grandparents.
Nice.
So, that's going to be awesome. So
happy birthday,
course,
there, Paul.
And of course,
happy
Paul.
Birthday, Paul.
I guess let's say happy birthday
happy
to Paul.
Birthday,
Hope
Paul.
You're enjoying Mexico.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and please support local businesses and charities.
Have a great week, everybody.
Bye bye.